Beis Din can no longer put people to death, right? God has ways of killing people anyway, right? And even without that, there's divine death. There's actually a story. Who's on the highest level? The Gemara says, who occupies the highest level in Gan Eden? Gan Eden, you know, to us we think about Gan Eden and Gehenna. I just had my kids were in the house. My 2.5-year-old son asked my 4.5-year-old daughter, who's a very big philosopher, he asked her, why is it that daddy's always davening? Right? Learning and davening to him is all the same thing. To many people it is, right? He's in that stage, right? He's a 2.5-year-old, there's no difference between learning and davening. So he asked her, why does daddy always have to daven? So she said to him, very simple answer, straight to the point. If you don't daven, you go to Gehenna. Right, that's what she said. It's a 4.5-year-old. Right? To these children, you know, it's a very real concept. Yeah, right? I just heard of a father who educated his daughter. His daughter said something. Right, she told a lie. I don't necessarily agree with this, by the way, but it's interesting. She told a lie. So the father took a burning hot piece of metal, and he came up to her and held it real close to her face, and he said to her, "Do you know what happens when you lie? When you lie, you go to Gehenna. And this is what it's like." Right? Now, he didn't go, and she never lied again. That's the end of the day. He didn't do that, right? But, to create the impression, right? I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. The only way I would agree with such a thing is if that same father, every time the kid does a mitzvah, the father walks up and says, "Close your eyes, open your mouth. This is Gan Eden, drop some candy in the mouth." If you do that, then you can worry about chasing the kids around with burning hot metal. Right? If you don't do that, then leave the metal out of the house. Right? The point is, the Gemara says, who occupies the highest level of Gan Eden? Right? The Gemara says it's the martyrs of Lud. Who are the martyrs of Lud? There were two brothers. They're called Papus and Lulianus. At a certain point, some Roman emperor, his daughter was found killed. So who did they blame, obviously? They blamed the Jews, right? So the Roman emperor called the Jewish community and said to the Jewish community, okay, we're going to kill all of you. So these two brothers, Papus and Lulianus, stepped forward and they said to him, it wasn't anybody in the community, it was us. We're the ones that killed her. Right? And by doing this, because they were going to die anyway, it was going to be collective death for all the Jews. Instead of everybody dying, they took the blame themselves, and that way everybody else would be spared. So this emperor took them out and he said to them, you know what? We're going to execute you. But if you're really worthy, right? If you're really worthy, then God will perform a miracle for you, just like he performed a miracle for Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, where in Nach it says that they were thrown into the fire, and they were saved from the fire. By Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar had them thrown into a fire, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were saved from the fire. So the emperor said to the Papas and Lianus, if you're worthy, you're going to be saved from, your God will save you. Just like Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they said to the emperor, listen, first of all, that miracle by Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were worthy to have a miracle performed for them, and Nebuchadnezzar was the king worthy to have a miracle performed through him. We are not worthy to have a miracle performed for us because we have to be put to death. We deserve death. And if you don't kill us, so God has all sorts of bears and lions and tigers. He could kill us anyway. Right? And second of all, you're not worthy to have a miracle performed through you. Right? Those are their last words. Right, that was Papas and Lianus. The Gemara says that Papas and Lianus occupy the highest level in Olam Haba. But for premature death, if the emperor wouldn't have done it, and they deserve to die, if they deserve to die, so then they're bearers and lions and everything else that God carries it out any way he needs to. Right, so that's the punishment for Korban Pesach. That's the punishment for neglect of the Korban Pesach, and the punishment for neglect of circumcision. So a Jew who wasn't circumcised, even if it was no fault of his own, let's say he had two brothers that died as a result of circumcision. The halacha is if two brothers die from circumcision, the third one's not circumcised.
So does that mean if you took that punishment that you don't get, right, you might as well not take any precautions like you can drop, because you're going to die anyway?
No. They can't do it. I didn't eat Korban Pesach this year. Well, I meat anyway, so I may as well do that. I'm going to go parachuting and go bungee jumping and do everything because after all, I'm going to go anyway. No, it doesn't work that way. You should do tshuva, because tshuva could always remove the decree. And B, you have a responsibility to protect your life anyway. If God wants it, God will take it. Right? The individual is not allowed to say, well, look, it's like saying on Russia, people ask. On Rosh Hashanah, there's the sentence on Rosh Hashanah is whether a person is going to live or is going to die, right? On Rosh Hashanah, God decides who's going to live and who's going to die. Well, that's it. Rosh Hashanah is over. Yom Kippur is over. great. Now I could, you know, let's go up to the roof and let's have that roof jumping contest. Because if we're supposed to die, we're going to die anyway, right? So what's the difference? The answer is that Rosh Hashanah, the ruling, the judgment, no, you're asking this very important question. The ruling and the judgment of Rosh Hashanah is that this person will die if X, Y, and Z, right? That means if he doesn't give enough tzedakah, he's going to die. If he doesn't do the mitzvahs, he's going to die. If he does certain things, he'll be able to earn life. Right, but if he behaves like a moron, he's going to die even if he gives tzedakah. Right, he can't jump off the roof. I'm going to give tzedakah. Right, and he crunches anyway. It's not going to help you. Right, you know, you can't. God is not going to change the entire running of the world because this guy wants to run and jump off a roof. It's the same thing over here. Just because the guy's chayav kares, do tshuva. For every Shabbos desecration, every time somebody just desecrates Shabbos intentionally, he incurs premature death. Yeah, go ahead.
Korban Pesach, everyone had to eat.
All these people had to. Anybody who missed the first Korban Pesach, the first Pesach, has to go and they have to bring the second Korban Pesach. They have to eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and with maror, except that they didn't have to get rid of the chametz. Right? They didn't have the obligation to get rid of the chametz like by the first Korban Pesach, but they did have the obligation to eat matzah and maror with the second Korban Pesach because that was the sign of the Korban Pesach was. Excuse me, what it stood for, that Exodus of Mitzrayim, and that's what the matzah and the maror stood for. Okay, that's 380. 381 is the flip side. What did I tell you 380 was?
I don't know, what was it actually?
Oh, I didn't tell you. Well, it'll tell you itself, right, Richard? The 380 is anyone that didn't do the first Pesach should do what's called Pesach Sheni on the 14th of the year. Anyone who did do the first Korban Pesach should do the second Korban Pesach. Okay? What we call Pesach, it's called Pesach because, first of all, the word Pesach means he skipped. God skipped over the Egyptian homes, right? The Jewish homes, and he got the Egyptian, the firstborn. But there's a sacrifice they brought at that occasion, that's called the Korban Pesach. Right? What we do the Seder night, when we have the Seder on Pesach, in the old days, the time of the Beis Hamikdash, at that very same Seder, when everybody was sitting around at the Seder, right, they also ate a lamb that they had roasted. Right? That was called the Korban Pesach, that was the Pesach sacrifice. Right? And anybody who didn't perform that during the 14th of Nisan has to perform it on the 14th of the year. That's 380. 381 is the obligation to eat matzah and moror with the Korban Pesach. That's what I told you.
With the second
one also, you have to eat matzah and maror. Obviously, you have to eat with the first one too. And this is a mandatory for men, but not mandatory for women because it is what? Positive command time bound. So it's not mandatory for women. No positive time bound commands, correct? Because a woman can't be bound by time. Right, because her job, which is extremely, extremely important, is not a time. You can't. Can you imagine a woman is in the home taking care of the kids, and it's almost time to say Kriya Shema. You know, you have to say Shema by a certain time, Dashma by a certain time, right? And the kids are screaming and hungry, right? Three older kids are screaming and hungry, and two of the younger kids are screaming and tired, and the baby is screaming and needs a diaper change. And while all this is going on, mommy says, "Sorry, kids, you're gonna just have to hold that screaming for a second. I have to go and daven." Right, or I have to say Shema. She cannot have time limitations because her responsibility transcends time. Right? She can't be limited by time. It's just not practical. That's why I try to tell my wife whenever I have to watch the kids, right, how difficult it is. Right? Because a woman can't understand that a man, while you're doing everything in the domestically, John Lennon didn't have this problem. That's why he was able to do it, right? But when you're doing things in the home, when you're in charge of the domestics, right, it's very difficult because you have to balance both. You're thinking to yourself, hey, I got to get this kid fed and this kid off to school, but I also got to get my tefillin on and get to shul, right, and get to meet, right? All you've got to balance all these, right? Very difficult, right? So for a man, it's, that's why, and a man has specifically, he's living his entire life time bound. Okay, that was 381. 382 is to not leave over any meat from the Pesach Sheni for the next day. Right? This is the same. It's a mirror image of the command by the first Pesach. Remember, by the first Korban Pesach, you're supposed to eat it and not leave over any for the next day. You remember why? This is for the second one. Right? You remember why you're not supposed to leave meat over from the Korban Pesach? What does the Korban Pesach symbolize? What's the state that you're in at the Pesach Seder?
Joy.
Sure. What are we supposed to pretend to be? We're free men. We're aristocrats. Remember you lean at the Pesach Seder? One of the great acrobatic feats. You sit at the Pesach Seder and you lean. Which side do you lean to? You lean to the left. Because why don't we lean to the right? The right is always more important. Because the trachea and the positioning of the trachea and the esophagus is such that the trachea is the food pipe, the trachea is the windpipe, the esophagus is the food pipe, right? And it is, they are one behind the other, but slightly to the left, right? The esophagus is slightly to the left, right? So the food that the trachea has got a covering called the epiglottis. And when you speak, right, this covering flips off, right? Pretty impressive, yeah? When you speak, my mother-in-law would be pleased, when you speak, this epiglottis comes off. That's why if you speak while you're eating, so the chas v'shalom, you can choke because the food goes down the wrong pipe, right? So if the epiglottis comes off and it's positioned slightly to the left, right? The trachea, the esophagus is slightly to the left. So if we lean to the right, the concern is that if you eat while leaning to the right, the chas v'shalom, the food will go down the wrong pipe. Therefore, you lean to the left on Pesach. The entire idea of leaning is supposed to symbolize what? Aristocracy, free men. not as much as arrogance, but we're the beautiful people, right? And you lean, right? And in the old days, when you look at the Talmud, in the old days, they used to eat in beds or on couches, right? Don't you remember these films? No, you guys don't, because you never watch TV, but I remember some of my friends saw these films where these Greeks would be leaning on some type of table in front of them, so that's how they used to eat in the old days, right? And the whole goal of Pesach is to picture ourselves as aristocrats. So
aristocrats
that's exactly why the command, very good, the command is not to leave any meat over for the next day, because aristocrats don't eat leftovers. If you're leaving stuff over for the next day, that means you're concerned, what am I going to eat tomorrow, right? Aristocrats don't eat leftovers, right? So the command is don't leave any over for the next day, and if you do leave it over for the next day, what has to be done with it? It has to be burned, right? You're not allowed to eat it.
I thought that also, while you're supposed to be eating on Pesach in a relaxed aristocratic fashion, also you're supposed to have your bags packed ready to go.
That's one of the reasons why we eat the matzah.
And so that would be one reason why you wouldn't eat everything had to be finished, so you were ready to go the next day.
I told you, the matzah is the balance that while we're standing there at this, we're being a bunch of aristocrats, yet what's always the main feature of a meal? Except for American teenagers.
Bread.
Right? American teenagers don't eat bread. American teenagers eat meat and potatoes, right? Or if you're vegetarian and potatoes, right? But when I was growing up, you rarely ate bread, right? Mom said, you want a bread? No, who wants a bread? Why should I eat bread if I could eat steak and french fries? Why should I take up precious space with bread, right? Right? It never used to be. Your grandparents ate bread and soup, right? And if they were lucky, there was a piece of some type of protein around. But they eat bread and soup was the meal. Pesach, the balance, in order to not let it go, you mentioned arrogance here. To maintain the balance, to make sure we don't let it go, just remember, you're eating poor man's bread, right? You're eating poor man's bread because God took you out of slavery, and had God not done that, you'd still be eating poor man's bread. But that's the balance of the meal. But the underlying theme of the meal is aristocracy. Aristocrats don't leave stuff over for the next day, right? That's A. That's the first mitzvah. The next one is 383. Which is you don't break any bones in the Korban Pesach. Why not? Because aristocrats don't gnaw on bones at the table. Right? When you go to the Queen, when you're sitting and eating state dinner with the Queen of England and the ambassador from who knows where, and they're all in the palace, right? I guarantee nobody is sitting there chewing on their, taking a drumstick and gnawing away on a drumstick. Aristocrats don't chew on bones and break bones. Right? As a matter of fact, they barely eat. I think, isn't there a rule? Aren't any of you from England? Right? Is there a rule that when the queen eats, you eat? When she stops, you stop? Something like that? When she stops eating, you
stand on your head too.
I have to stand on your head. Yeah, I imagine something like that, right? I have my own suspicion that after they finish the state dinner, that has not been confirmed, but I would imagine that they go off in the back room, they have a submarine waiting for them, right? Yeah, because they're supposed to be hungry. You've been sitting there in this song, like, tickling the food, and then you finish it. But at a state dinner, nobody gnaws on bones. That's 383. Don't break bones in a Korban Pesach. It's also a sign of being in a hurry. Okay. What do you remember with the first Korban Pesach, the other limitations were, which don't exist over here because
being bruised.
You're not allowed to break the bones. You're not allowed to take it out of the area where you're eating it. By the first, now that's not a limitation by the second Korban Pesach, but by the first one, you're not allowed to take it out from where you're eating it, because why would you take your foot? In other words, you were assigned, there was a place where you committed yourself to eat it, right? And there was an assigned group that was going to eat it together. right? All of which is the same theme of aristocracy. That's in by invitation only, and you're going to eat it in a certain place, a certain pre-agreed upon location. Why don't you take it out of there? Because taking it out, why would you take your food out from where you're supposed to eat it? Why would you take your food? You would want to show it to somebody else, right? Which means it's a novelty, right? Aristocrats eat their food and it's not a novelty to them, right? When you're eating something, when it's a real experience, gee, we're having steak. Oh, wow, this is unbelievable, right? And you go and you run and show your neighbor that you're eating roast meat, right? That means that roast meat's a novelty to you. Now, aristocrats eat the best, right? And they're not impressed by it, right? No, ooh, ah, right? They're not, no ooing and aahing, because it's not a novelty, right? So you're not allowed to take it out. That's by the first Korban Pesach. The last thing, I just want to just finish with this. The mitzvah of matzah and moror, which they ate the Korban Pesach, that exists nowadays at the Pesach Seder. And the matzah that we eat, you have to eat a certain amount of matzah within a certain period of time, right? There are actually some people, by the preferred course, according to halacha, believe it or not, is they take the piece of matzah, it would equal about half of a machine matzah. Right? Picture a machine matzah, about half of a machine matzah, and you eat it, you chew it up, and you keep until you get the entire half of matzah eaten and chewed up in your mouth, and then you swallow it all at once. Right? Now that's what halacha says, as Richard reaches for his throat, right? That's what halacha says. I'm not convinced that that's what halacha means, and I have heard of a case, believe it or not, of an emergency tracheotomy at a Pesach Seder. Right? So you're not supposed to get into any type of situation where it's going to be an emergency tracheotomies, right? So I'm not convinced that that's what the halacha means, that you have to get to swallow this massive ball, right? Like a snake swallowing a rodent, and you can see it going all the way down your throat. You don't have to do that.